On this week's edition of New York Now, we'll unpack the state's handling of women's issues, starting with a push by state lawmakers to make menstrual products more accessible and safe. Next, we'll discuss the creation of a task force to examine the rates of missing BIPOC women and children. And then we'll sit down with State Senator Sahma Brouk to discuss how the state is expanding access to doula care and approaching maternal health priorities this year. I'm Chantal Destra, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation.
I will fight like hell for you every single day, like I've always done and always will.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Chantal Destra. It's no secret that recent rulings on abortion access by the United States Supreme Court have created a heightened sensitivity around the issue all around the country, especially as we look ahead at elections this year. In New York, Governor Kathy Hochul signed the law codifying abortion access in the state back in 2022. And since then, the governor, along with the Democratic-led legislature, has continued to make abortion access and reproductive rights key aspects of their priorities. But one important element of women's health also has to deal with menstrual hygiene products, and access to these products does not come easy for everyone. In New York, one in six women and girls between the ages of 12 and 44 live below the poverty line, and as a result, have grave difficulty affording essentials, including food, shelter, and menstrual hygiene products. State lawmakers have continued to push legislation to help make those products more accessible and safe. For more on the state's approach to women's issues and period poverty in the state, we're joined in studio by Elise Klein of WENY News. Thank you so much for being here with us, Elise.
Thank you for having me.
Now, can you tell us how you got started reporting on women's issues? Why has this been a focus of your reporting so far?
So in college, I wrote my first article kind of on women's issues in the period poverty, like menstrual movement. I read a book called Period Power by Nadia Okamoto. She started a nonprofit that is now like worldwide. It distributes menstrual products to people all over the world. And it just kind of really inspired me to dig deeper into that issue. And so then when I got into professional journalism, I started exploring that topic more.
And I wanted to ask you about a bill that you've reported on that would expand access to menstrual products on college campuses and make it more accessible. So what is the status of this bill? What are you hearing from advocates and lawmakers about the path forward this year? I know, you know, last year it didn't make it over the legislative finish line.
Yeah, so last year it did not make it over the finish line. It passed the Senate, but it died in assembly, and it wasn't quite clear why it died in assembly, and that's not uncommon. Sometimes we don't always have a clear answer as to why things don't pass, but it is important to note that last year when the budget went into overtime, a lot of bills kind of got pushed aside. So this year, that bill is currently still in both Senate and Assembly committees, but lawmakers are telling me they are confident that it'll move forward this session. I do think, you know, it might depend a little bit on how the budget goes. So sometimes that does delay bills a little bit. So we'll have to see how that follows through.
And one thing that I thought was interesting was that New York makes period products free of charge for students in middle school and high school. But it seems like getting that college portion has been a little bit stalled. So why do you think that is?
You know, sometimes it's not always clear as to why some bills go forward and some don't. But I do think that it, you know, some lawmakers have said that there are some opposition to getting it on college campuses, and you know, last year it did pass the Senate, so that is a positive, you know, a positive sign that it will pass again this year in the Senate, and hopefully it'll pass in the Assembly as well. But it could be that maybe, you know, with college campuses and more students, you know, maybe there's more guardrails that they have to get through. But it's definitely an important bill that a lot of lawmakers are pushing for and that they're hoping will pass this year.
So from your purview, how does the state stack up against other states in its approach to women's issues?
You know, I think that New York has passed a lot of, and I've seen a lot of really interesting bills through session last year and this year that have really tried to address the issue of access for period products. I know Senator Prasad has a bill. I'm not quite sure if that's been introduced yet, but she has told me that she's trying to make period products accessible in all public buildings. So that would be, I think, a really huge step for just making these product basic necessities accessible for everyone. And, you know, there's been other bills related to maternal health and you know, and period products. So I have seen quite a few bills that have gone through, but, you know, obviously I think there's always more. There's a more that people could do.
And you've been reporting a lot on this, but how would you say the overall media landscape is doing in terms of reporting on women's issues? Are there any areas that you think the Albany Press Corps is overlooking?
Well, I think period poverty is one issue that is definitely overlooked. I think that, you know, there is a lot of focus on, like, the issue of abortion and that kind of having a lot of national attention. But I think that sometimes we can fall short of reporting on period poverty issues. And there are so many interesting bills in the legislature that, you know, help provide access to these basic necessities and these products for people who might not otherwise have access to them. There was a bill, I think, that was a law that was signed last year, or might be the year before, to make the products accessible in homeless shelters. And so there's a lot of really interesting pieces that sometimes it feels like I might be the only reporter looking into these issues, but, you know, there are other women's issues that do get other attention as well. I just think that period poverty is one issue that kind of doesn't get as much attention as it should.
And are there any threads that you're hoping to pull on in the remainder of the session? Any reporting aspects that you're hoping to focus more on as we go into the next few months?
So there's one bill that I'm looking to really focus on that is related to like the health of period products. So it's the legislation is intending to restrict certain substances in period products. And it also has a definition within the legislation to restrict those substances within the definition of like fragrances, colorants, dyes, which is where sometimes, you know, chemicals like mercury and lead get kind of snuck into period products through the definition of it's a colorant or it's a dye or it's a preservative. So there's legislation that it did pass the Senate. It's not passed the Assembly yet. But that's a really interesting bill that I'll be definitely focusing on.
Well, there's a lot to look forward to, but unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there for now. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we were speaking with Elise Klein of WENY News. Thank you. We'll bring you updates on the bills aimed at improving the access and safety of menstrual products right here on the show and online on our website. That's at nynow.org. Now turning to another important topic. Federal reports show that there were hundreds of thousands of missing women and children in recent years, and a large portion of that figure identified as Black, Indigenous, and people of color. That reality has led to calls for state action from lawmakers and advocates to help address the crisis. Lawmakers and the governor are slated to establish a 9-member task force in the coming months. The body will assess the crisis and issue policy recommendations. Here's that story. Governor Kathy Hochul signed a law to establish a task force on missing women and girls who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. The sponsors of the legislation, State Senator Leah Webb and Assemblymember Karinas Reyes, say the task force will help shed light on the grave amount of missing BIPOC women and children each year and deliver policy recommendations.
This landmark law is a huge milestone for the safety and security of Black, Indigenous people of color, women and girls across our state. It is an alarming number of women and girls of color who go missing or are murdered each year. No family should ever have to deal with these traumatic experiences.
The legislation has broad support from Democratic lawmakers hailing from areas across the state, including State Senator Brad Hoyleman Segal, Senator Samra Brook, Senator Natalia Fernandez, as well as a few Republicans who voted in favor of the measure when it was brought to the floor. Long Island Assemblymember Taylor Darling underscored how the issue directly impacts the constituents in her community.
It appears some children are more valuable than others, and I just want to publicly say that our children matter. We care when they're not at home. We'd like them not to be human trafficked and sex trafficked, and one child missing should affect all of us. That is all of our problem. We have so many children from my community that are reported missing and classified as runaways, so that, again, that sense of urgency, that time, that 48 hours that we need to locate our children, it's missed. Those are missed opportunities, which often lead to death.
And advocates agree. Dawn Rowe, founder of Girl Vow, underscored the importance of bringing awareness to the issue in order to see change.
When you do this work, you learn quickly as you work with families that silence is loud. And injustice, it lasts a very long time. So today is historical. As we begin the arduous task to begin our dialogues, as we change the lens where girls have been reduced to only understanding trauma, so today we activate healing.
In looking at the work ahead, Assemblymember Karinas Reyes agreed with advocates who called for an oversight initiative in the coming years.
I think there should be some kind of oversight, particularly with over law enforcement, because they kind of piecemeal the response in these cases, and they take very in the moment decisions about what warrants a runaway, what warrants an Amber Alert. We really want to make sure that those processes are streamlined, regardless of where you live, regardless of who goes missing. We want to make sure that those processes are streamlined for all people who go missing, and that they are accountable when there are breaches in that process.
And the work is not over just because the governor signed the bill into law. The governor and the legislature will now go on to identify members of the task force in the coming months, who will then have 2 years to come up with policy recommendations to help address the issue of missing BIPOC women and children in the years to come.
And we'll continue to bring you the latest updates on the task force to address missing BIPOC women and children right here on the show. Now on to another topic. Last year, the state expanded Medicaid coverage for patients who use doulas and established a community doula directory. State Senate Mental Health Committee Chair Samra Brook has continued to prioritize maternal health since getting elected. We spoke with the senator to unpack how the state will expand access to doula care and prioritize maternal health this year.
Thank you so much for being here, Senator.
Thanks for coming.
Now, last year you released a report that really spelled out the state of doula care in New York. Coming out of that, there was a lot of revelations and some policy recommendations. So I wanted to get your perspective on why doula care and maternal health has continued to be one of your top priorities as a lawmaker.
Absolutely. Well, it was something that I obviously was interested in as a legislator in general, just being a woman in New York. But I have to say, the big moment for me came in 2022 when I became a mother and went through the birthing process. And I really credit my doula for really helping me have a healthy outcome and a positive outcome for me and my daughter. And so, you know, having that informational, physical, emotional support that the doula provided allowed me to actually, you know, enjoy that process. And even following the birth, a lot of folks don't realize that doulas provide a lot of support postpartum as well. And all of that was just so tremendously helpful. And so, even after having that experience, it became very clear to me that it was going to be my mission to make sure that every New Yorker who has a baby has at least the option to have a doula. So that has really been a driving motivation to get this work done. But then the other piece of it is simply being a Black woman in New York State, right? So really the United States is actually the most dangerous place for someone to give birth in the developed world. But on top of that, Black women, especially here in New York, are 5 times more likely to die in childbirth or related to pregnancy. So when you look at statistics like that, it's really, really scary. And what we know is that doula care, again, these are non-clinical professionals that offer, you know, emotional, informational, physical support, are actually able to help intercept some of the negative outcomes that happen specifically for women of color. And so when you look at that and you see this could be a really huge help to fighting the maternal mortality crisis, it's a no-brainer that it's something that I want to continue to support here in New York. Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is you're not alone in trying to expand access to doula care. The governor signed one of your bills that you sponsored to create a directory of doulas in the state. So can you tell me about your conversations with the governor to expand doula care in the state?
The governor has been a tremendous partner on this. As we saw in her State of the State, even this year in 2024, she is prioritizing maternal health, maternal mental health. So the bill that was passed last year was our community doula directory. And the whole point of that is that we were aware that starting January 1st of this year, there was going to be Medicaid reimbursement rollout for doula care. So that means that any person who's covered with Medicaid who gives birth in New York State can now be reimbursed should they choose to hire a doula. And just to put a finer point on that, nearly 50% of births in New York State are covered under Medicaid. So when we think about changing the trajectory of New York State, we are literally affecting potentially nearly half of the births in New York State, which is so huge. And so after having that Medicaid rollout, now we think about, okay, how do we make it accessible? How do we make sure people know about it, right? And so that's why the community doula directory was so important, because DOH really needs to take the responsibility for having accurate information so that anyone who's searching for a doula on Medicaid can easily go on the DOH website and know that they can find vetted doulas in their area. And so that's what that bill was about, because at the end of the day, if you have, you know, you can have all the doulas in the world accepting Medicaid and being, you know, enrolled, but if mothers and birthing people can't find that information, what good is it? That's where we need the information to get. And so the community doula directory is a huge step in that. And so I was very, very proud to be able to stand with the governor in November and have her sign that bill.
So expectant mothers enrolled in Medicaid will be reimbursed if they choose to utilize a doula. But what about mothers that aren't enrolled in Medicaid? Is there any thinking that, you know, you'll expand to have statewide mandates for private insurance companies to cover that cost as well?
Yeah. I mean, for me, yes. My goal is yes. My goal is, again, everybody in New York who wants a doula should be able to have one. What I will say is that usually we start with the Medicaid reimbursement, right? Because we know so many people are served through Medicaid. But a lot of times what happens, and this happened in other states as well, private insurance companies see what is happening through Medicaid and will a lot of times follow suit. So I'm really, really happy to say that I've had, even in the last couple of weeks, conversations with commercial insurance providers who have said they intend on starting the reimbursement process for doula care. And so, you know, I hope more insurance providers will take note and realize that at the end of the day, it can be a cost-saving measure for an insurance provider, right? So if you look at some of the data of using a doula, doulas actually decrease the amount of time during birth by up to 25%. So if you think about that, that's less time in a hospital, right? Less time the insurance has to pay. They decrease the number of emergency C-sections, which are incredibly expensive and somewhat dangerous procedures. So if you're looking at it from an insurance provider's perspective, spending $1,500, even $2,000 on reimbursement for doula care could save you tens of thousands of dollars if it's improving the outcomes at the end of the day for that mother and the baby. So right now it is not mandated in state law, but my hope is that we can work with providers to see that there is tremendous value in doing this.
And as chair of the Senate Mental Health Committee, in what ways does support and resources for expectant mothers really help them through their pregnancy? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, so, you know, I will say doulas help with a lot of the physical labor, if you will, but they also help on the mental health side. So I've shared with several folks that one of the most powerful moments I had with my doula was the first day I was sent back from the hospital, sent home, new mom, no idea what I'm doing, very confused. I have this beautiful little being in my arms and just so focused on her, so focused on everything that I need to do for her. And my doula asked me a very simple question. She just looked at me and said, "How are you?" And it was just life-changing because I hadn't really checked in on myself. And just giving me that space to say, am I okay? Do I feel emotionally, psychologically okay? Luckily I did, and I felt like I had a lot of support. But even having someone to ask those questions of new mothers is so, so important. And actually, maternal mental health conditions are the number one most common pregnancy complication. So 1 in 5 birthing people will face some type of maternal mental health condition. And it's more than just postpartum depression, right? It can be the onset of anxiety, of OCD in the postpartum time period. And so we've done a lot when it comes to maternal mental health as well. So we got the maternal mental health work group passed in last year's budget and funded. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to make sure folks understand too that that's one of the only work groups that will reimburse for childcare. And that was a really big component for me to have in that legislation, because if we truly want affected individuals, which are parents or mothers, on this work group to really be able to speak to their experience, we can't say, oh, come do this work group. It's a voluntary body, right? You're going to come and volunteer your time, but we're not going to take care of your kid for you. Mm-hmm. So they actually will reimburse for childcare, and they have started to meet. So that is incredible. We also last year also passed a bill to study the depression screenings that were done. And this actually came out of my own personal experience of going through these screenings at my child's pediatric appointments. And we realized that there was some space there to perhaps expand which providers are giving these screenings. And so the bill that we passed in the legislature this year, we're hoping to get signed by the governor, actually will expand which providers are encouraged to give these screenings. So for example, I think a lot of parents put their own health on the back burner when their child is in need. And so, you know, I didn't miss any of those pediatric appointments. It was 2 days, it was 2 weeks, right? You're going there so often. So now DOH will put out recommendations that at pediatric appointments, they're also supplying these depression screenings to new parents. And I think that that's really important, because you know that they're more likely to go to these appointments, and now there's a chance to really hopefully intercept and perhaps even start treatment plans for anyone who needs it.
And as you continue to focus on doula care and maternal health in the years ahead, what are the implications of not expanding access to doula care and focusing on, for example, postpartum anxiety disorders and really pushing forward that work group that you mentioned?
I mean, if we don't do this work, we already see what happens. It's the moment we're in, right? So when we didn't have people in positions of policymaker positions, when we didn't have mothers, you know, in the legislature, we were failing mothers throughout New York State, because our maternal mortality crisis is getting worse. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. A lot of things in this country have gotten better, sure, but the truth is, when it comes to maternal health, we are worse off today than we were years ago. And so if we don't continue to make these investments and really put in the work that's going to reach the end user, right, reach the New Yorker who needs the help, we will see it continue to get worse. And when I say get worse, I'm talking about literally losing lives of mothers, losing lives of our children, and that is 100% unacceptable. And so that's why, you know, I call it beating the drum. We're just going to keep beating the drum. And, you know, I can't stress enough that we can see and feel the difference when we have people who understand these issues in these positions and who are willing to use that and have the courage to move these things forward, right? The governor could have just as easily not included maternal mental health in her priorities, but she did. And so what we're doing is working, and I don't think anyone in this sector is anywhere close to stopping. So we're gonna keep beating the drum and keep going really until we solve this crisis.
Mm-hmm. And we're 2 months into the legislative session. We're in the thick of budget negotiations. It's also an election year, and there's so many different legislative priorities this year. So in a perfect world, what would doula access expansion and focusing on maternal health, what would that look like this session? Like, what would a successful legislative session look like?
Well, my success is going to be when every single New Yorker who wants a doula gets one. that's my North Star. That's my success. That's what I'm, you know, that's my goal. But I think for right now, we're really focused on specifically in the budget, right? We want to make sure that we're making the investments in maternal health and maternal mental health. Success will look like Department of Health continuing to keep doulas at the table as they continue to roll out this Medicaid benefit, and not just at the table of decision making, but also at the center of the decision making. And so we've tried as best we can to help facilitate that relationship, but that's going to be crucial, right, to make sure that we can actually bring this all to fruition. And I think it's continuing to listen to the people who are most impacted. And that was one of the things that I said when I entered this seat a few years ago, was that I was very aware that there are huge swaths of New Yorkers who have by and large been ignored for many, many years by state government. And I vowed to stop that, at least on my own part. And so when I entered the seat, it was really important that I talk to some of our most vulnerable New Yorkers. And what I learned is some of our most vulnerable are our Black and Brown mothers. And so to make sure that they are feeling seen and heard, and that the decisions we make will benefit them, because we know when it benefits them, it's going to benefit everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot there, and there's a lot to look forward to this session, but we'll have to leave it there for now. Thank you so much, Senator, for your time.
Thank you so much.
And we were speaking with Senator Samra Brouk, chair of the Senate Mental Health Committee.
And we'll continue to bring you updates on how the state is working to address maternal health issues and expand access to doula care right here on the show. And for more information and resources, you can visit our website. Again, that's at nynow.org. Well, that does it for this edition of New York Now. Thank you for tuning in, and see you next week.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.